This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Isn't it wonderful how nature evolved to support us? Except that isn't how it works at all. A lifetime leader in conservation warns planet Earth is not a delicately balanced, benign being. Robert Nassy should know. Dr. Nassy is a French-trained ecologist, now director general of the world's largest forest science organization, C4. We will find out what that is and the changing role of tropical forests, especially here on a climate-challenged planet. From Bogor, Indonesia, Robert Nassy, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Good morning, Alex. Thank you for having me.
You lead a global conservation group with a multi-million dollar budget. You are an acknowledged expert on tropical forest life. What stirred you to poke around at this image of well-meaning nature?
Talk about what we are having here is an international research organization that has the mandate to work on forest trees and agroforestry, mostly in the tropics. And we are looking at the contribution on forest trees and agroforestry to the sustainable development, livelihood of the people, preservation of the environment, and crises like the biodiversity loss or climate crisis or inequities. What we are facing and have been in this line of quote-unquote business for almost 40 years now, you sometimes wake up with the feeling that we didn't make much progress. And what you read is this sort of idea that human beings are particularly important in the grand scheme of things, and that if we don't do anything, the world will disappear, and that we need to rebalance our relationship with Mother Earth and something like that. And I think that's very much a hubris thing. I mean, we don't really count in the grand scheme of things. I mean, a sort of humans are a blip in the history of Earth, and whether we disappear or not because of our foolishness, Earth will continue, life will continue in a different way. And so that's why I wanted to write this piece. And I think that's, if we do something now, it's not for Mother Earth, it's for us, because Mother Earth doesn't really care about us. So, and I know that some people may disagree, but I don't think that nature is a benign being. I mean, a sort of if a species disappeared, and we have had 5 recorded mass extinctions in the past, some of these have lost more than 95% of the existing life form at that time. And humans, we are starting the 6th max extinction, and we may end up being part of the list of the one going extinct. That's why, I mean, you need to wake up the people and say, guys, we need to do something. It's for us, primarily, if we want to continue having a civilization and enjoying the beauty on Earth.
I want to get to a key sentence that you wrote in your blog post at the C4 site. You said, tipping points are rapid, brutal changes in socio-ecological systems triggered by slow variables. Now, there's a whole lot in that sentence, and I think everybody needs to understand this key thought. How would you unpack that?
The easiest example is the classical one is what you call the eutrophication of lake. That means that you have a lake in a place, and this lake is full of fish, and the water of the lake are more or less neutral in terms of acidity, and there is light, and so there is an ecosystem functioning. And then you have this lake is surrounded by agricultural land, and these agricultural land are slowly seeping nitrogen for the fertilizer in the lake. And for a long time, you don't see anything. And then one morning you wake up, the lake is different. Suddenly it's brown. Most of the fish are floating belly up because they are dead. And then you have passed the tipping point. So the slow variable was the sort of the slow building of the nitrogen in the water. And then when it reached a certain level, then the lake flipped into another state. The tipping points were local. So you had a lake that was trophic, or you had an ecosystem, a forest that moved into a savanna because of degradation. What is happening now is that we are seeing emergence of global tipping points, and that's a big problem. Like people forecast that the Amazon will become a savanna within the next 20 or 30 years, and that will be irreversible. And if we lose the Amazon forest, we lose a huge amount of carbon sequestration and all the water regime, the rainfall that is linked with that. So it will become overnight something that is a big issue. And other of these tipping points are the melting of the polar caps or the changing direction of the Gulf Stream or the oceanic current or the thawing of the permafrost. That things that will suddenly shift in another state and at the global scale and create havoc. And the additional problem we have is that there's about 10, 12 of these global tipping points, and they are interrelated. That means that when you triggered one, you will end up having a cascade effect, and then other will be triggered. So that's the melting of the polar cap will change the direction of the Gulf Stream, that will change the temperature and the rainfall in the Amazon, that will convert the Amazon in a savanna. And that's what we have managed to do with our activity. We have totally...
You know, we hear a lot about the Amazon rainforest. Let's talk for a minute about Indonesia, where you are based. How would you compare the importance of the great forests of Indonesia and the Amazon?
They are as important. I mean, so I don't think that you can give a sort of value judgment. One is more important than the other. The fact is that as of today, we haven't seen a tipping point like that in the Indonesian forest, because they are spread on a very different gradient of ecological condition, highland, lowland, several islands. What we have noticed, nevertheless, is the fact that there has been a steady decrease in precipitation over Borneo, for example. And that may be something that is the first premise of a potential tipping point, right? Because when the precipitation will become too low, I mean, forest will not be able to exist and will move into a more open vegetation. So I don't think that one is more important than the other. I think both are important. The one that is, in a sense, in the news now, because there is empirical evidence that something is happening, is the Amazon.
You know, there was sort of a major climate event in late 1997-98, that strong El Nino year, and Indonesian peat bogs that had been drained for palm oil plantations caught fire, and that deep peat released so much carbon dioxide that Indonesia, which is a developing country, rose to be one of the three biggest greenhouse gas emitters on the planet that year, and there was a lot of unhealthy smoke. I worry that can happen again, and perhaps that is... We won't call it a tipping point, but it is a major climate event, I think.
Yeah, it is a major event. And then unfortunately, it happened more than 97. There was a big fire in 2015 also, and then 2019 related to similar issue. The fact is that this peatland, they cover about 3% of the surface of the world, but they store as much carbon as all the other vegetation combined. And so when they are going in smoke, they release a lot of greenhouse gases. And that's why, I mean, the government of Indonesia, following the 2015 fire, realized that it was urgent to restore this peatland where they have been degraded. And they have created a specific agency to do that. And they are embarking in a program of restoration of peatland. Not an easy feat, but it's a positive movement. And then we see the same also in temperate or boreal peatland, where people realize, oh, we better not touch this ecosystem and try to restore the one that we have degraded, because they are potentially on an area basis the most dangerous emitters of greenhouse gases.
One last thing on Indonesia specifically. I know that the two biggest pulp and paper companies in the country, APP and April, they're both planning massive expansion of production. I think they're going to double it or something. And I worry this will lead to conversion of more of Indonesia's remaining intact forest, maybe in West Papua or Kalimantan. What would be your thoughts on that?
It's a bit difficult to have a sort of a definite, informed opinion on that. If you listen to the proponent, APP or RAPP, they will tell you that, in fact, they plan to feed their mill with their existing plantation. And that may be possible. So that means that there will not be more opening or more cutting of natural forests for plantation. And legislation in Indonesia these days has a permanent moratorium on cutting any primary forest or any new concession on peatland. So there is some sort of safeguard, but nothing is really said about secondary forests. So it's a matter of how this company will be conscious, controlled. There is something that can be played by government in terms of legislation, but also by consumers in terms of not buying paper for a company that is cutting primary forest to make pulp and paper. The jury is still out on this one.
In the 1980s and 90s, I recall, and this was before there was a climate movement, saving forests was a focus of environmental activism. We wanted to save this valley or that valley. Hundreds were arrested here in Canada. Do forest activists now have to introduce themselves as climate players just to be relevant?
No, but for a long time, I mean, it's probably starting with, let's say, Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring. There has been an environmental movement, and this environmental movement has generally been opposed to logging or to cutting forests or any human activity that degrade the environment. For a long time, I mean, these people have been considered as marginals, and the interest of industry and corporation were considered more important and we cut forests. And what is happening with the climate agenda is that suddenly forests got a much more prominent public profile because they were large repository of sequestered carbon, and also they were offering some relatively cheap opportunity to store more carbon if you plant more trees. And so that's why suddenly forestry and sustainable forestry was surfing on the wave of climate change mitigation or adaptation. It's a positive point in a sense for the forest. Is not a good sign because we have not managed to solve it for the last 40 years.
Tracking the climate challenge, Radio EcoShock at ecoshock.org.
We are tuned to Radio EcoShock. Our guest is Dr. Robert Nassy, Director General of the Center for International Forestry Research, CIFOR. We're talking about forests, climate change, and human change. Okay, Robert, you lead the CIFOR group, and that now includes another organization called World Agroforestry. I will bet most of my listeners do not know what these are, because really you're dealing with governments and large nonprofits and banks, but not so much with the public face, as I've noticed. What do you do as an organization, Robert?
CIFOR and ICRAP, the World Agroforestry Center, I mean, are international organizations that do research, capacity development, and communication outreach on the issue of forest, trees, and agroforestry. And so what do? We work with many partners. And just to give you an idea, I mean, CIFOR and ICRAF is about 700 people. Half of these people are scientists and do research, and we are operating in about 90 countries. And we have a permanent presence in 30 other countries. So it's not a big organization if you compare to other organizations like the UN or FAO. But I think we have a meaningful and significant influence on the agenda on forestry and agroforestry. And then we are working with partners because we are too small to do things by ourselves, and because if you want to achieve results, you need to have a partner in country and that are believing in the same thing as you, and they are willing to do the same thing. And we have five thematic area. One is climate change. The other one is about value chain, finance, and investment. One on governance, gender equality. One in soil health, land health. One on genetic resources and biodiversity. And we have a team of scientists that are working on the ground with partners in terms of answering the questions that are asked by policymakers or by communities for the sustainable management of forestry and agroforestry. Of course, like many science organizations, we are not necessarily very good at communicating to the large public. But that's something that we realized a few years ago, and now we have significant communication program, use of social media. And so it's getting better, but I guess that, yes, a lot of your audience doesn't know who we are. But if you go to our website, I mean, I think it's in open access, and you can learn very, very quickly.
And that's at c4.org. I am a bit nervous about defining forests as tools for human use. What does the term agroforestry really mean, and can it be truly green?
There is a definition on forest, I mean, generally speaking, by FAO or by the Convention on Climate Change. But since I've been working, forester, I've been always discussing about the definition of forest. I mean, My best definition on forest is that when you are inside the forest, you know that it is a forest. Then you don't necessarily need to know what the percentage of canopy cover. And agroforestry is something that it's a form of management, and it's where you introduce trees into agricultural land to create a more complex and more diverse and more resilient system. You can have a rice field totally devoid of tree, or you can have a rice field growing trees together with the rice field. These trees produce fodder for your livestock, or fruits for the village, or shade, or whatever. So they produce additional service that comes on top of your agricultural production. And because of the way they have been installed, they do not have a negative impact on the main commodity that you want to produce, be it maize or rice or cocoa or coffee. So that's the idea of the agroforestry systems, I mean, sort of putting more trees in the agricultural land. And although the term was coined into the Western countries, farmers in Indonesia have been and in many other places, I've been using agroforestry system for millennia. In home garden, there's a very long history of man in terms of using agroforestry system, and probably longer than there is a history of doing monoculture. When you had the hedgerow in the field in Europe or in the other country, that has an agroforestry system. I mean, unfortunately, because of the way our economic system is working, people have had a tendency to drop this agroforestry system and to move to more intensive monoculture with higher fertilizer input that produce more on an hectare basis, but on the longer term create a lot of environmental problem. And that's why we have this problem now with agriculture and food system that are the main cause of deforestation, but also one of the main cause of unsustainable land use or loss of fertility and so on.
Here is something else we all need to learn about. What is the Global Landscapes Forum, and what is your role in that?
The Global Landscape Forum is a partnership platform with now I think about 30 or 35 members. And it is really a place to exchange and a place to bring together people that will not talk to each other normally. So it brings together not only the forest people, but also the agricultural people and the people interested in fresh water, the people interested in blue carbon in ocean. So it's and you create this platform where the vice president of the World Bank can discuss with a group of farmers in one place. And all this, it's very important because a lot of the reason why we are not managing particularly well landscape is the fact that there is not enough communication, not enough exchange between the different players. And so that was the idea of when we created the Global Landscape Forum. That was a sort of an offspring of some event that we were organizing was Forest Day and Agricultural Day, putting together. And now it becomes one of the largest platform, and we have reached more than 250 million people through social media. When we organize events, we have more than 140, 150 countries, nationality participating to the events. For something like the Global Landscape Forum, the COVID-19 has been somewhat of a blessing in disguise, because as it was not possible to travel, we move into a more digital sort of event, and then suddenly you can have people that will not have the money to travel to attend your big conference, but now could participate through online platform, and we could reach more people. So that's the whole idea, I mean, it's sort of create a movement around the sustainable management of landscape. And by landscape, we mean large territories where there are several conflicting or use like agriculture, forestry, urbanization, industry.
You talk about the need to move from fossil power to a bio-based economy. How do you envision an economy based on biology rather than oil, coal, and gas? And can we do it without killing off more natural systems?
If we want to have a chance to stay under the 2-degree limit in terms of climate change, we need to reduce considerably or even stop our fossil fuel consumption by 2050. Because I don't think that people will want to go back to walking, using horses, or we will need to find a substitute. And this substitute could be renewable energy using wind, use hydropower, using solar. But some of the biggest greenhouse gas emissions are in terms of making concrete, making cement, steel. And so we could also use wood material, wood-derived material, to replace concrete and steel. But that means that we need to still have a significant amount of forest or a significant amount of plantation that produce this wood material. And that's a real challenge. Because if we want to move into a bio-based economy, we need more forests, we need more plantation, and we need to have that at the same time without jeopardizing the need to feed the people and to have land for agriculture. So that's a big challenge, but it's a challenge that I think we can face, but we need to start now because it takes time for trees to grow. And you see more and more, in fact, appearing. Some people are building skyscraper with cross-laminated timber. And there is also the same with using biomass to produce energy, which may be topical, but in some condition may be something quite logical and something that will avoid using fossil fuel. So that's the whole idea. I mean, so if we want to continue having a decent standard of living and reduce our fossil fuel consumption, we need to find alternative. And we do have some alternatives in terms of energy, but in terms of building material, in terms of clothes, and we need to find other alternatives. And the best alternative we have are derived from wood.
Is there an overarching plan to use world forests to help stabilize the climate or at least slow down our damage?
We cannot stabilize the climate only using forests and trees. That's not going to work. The only way we can stabilize the climate is to stop emitting greenhouse gases and to start capturing some of the CO2 that is already emitted. Forests can certainly play a role in that, forests and trees. But if you consider that about 30% of the emission of green gases come from the forest and land use sector, that means that 70% comes from somewhere else. So that's, unless we fix somewhere else, and this is the whole issue of using use of fossil fuel or a very green carbon intensive industry like steel making or cement making, we are not going to solve our problem. So forest, definitely part of a solution, but not the solution. We need a combination of less dependency to fossil fuel, more renewable energy, more use of biomaterial and more forest. The advantage that we have in terms of forest is that when you have completely decarbonized a sector, there is a residual amount of fossil fuel that you will still need to use. And then you can think of that for airline travel or for shipping. I mean, it will be very difficult to decarbonize completely this sector. Then you can use additional forest or additional tree planting to offset these remaining greenhouse gases that you cannot remove from your industrial sector. So forest and trees and agroforestry system and for the matter ocean and seagrass have a role to play in terms of combating climate crisis, but they cannot be the only solution.
Is there anything else you would like to tell our listeners?
I think that in spite of all the gloom and doom, we should remain optimistic. I mean, and then we should try to solve our problem and certainly not running into the street with the cover in ashes and setting the doom day. And I think we can do it, but that requires that everybody act and not simply look at what the other is doing. It's a matter of government. It's a matter of individual choices. But it's also very much a society matter. So I think we can do it if we want. We don't have a lot of time to do it, but it's now or never. And as I said at the beginning, I mean, a sort of whether we do it and we thrive as a new ecological civilization or we don't do it and we disappear, more or less, we don't care much.
From Bogor, Indonesia, we have been speaking with Dr. Robert Nasi, scientist and director general of the Center for International Forestry Research. Find links to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org, and you can go direct to www.c4.org. I'm Alex Smith. Your time is valuable. Thank you for listening and caring about this world.